Thank you for the organizers for organizing such a wonderful workshop and giving me the opportunity to speak here. So the title of the talk is Towards Higher TC Topological Superconductors. And the main message is going to be that we predict it is possible to engineer a topological superconductor that is triplet chiral, possibly chiral, with much higher TC than the ones we have. It's my pleasure to acknowledge my collaborators. Ab initio work by Craig Fendi and his student, and MB growth by Daryl Schlamm and postdoc Carolina Adamo, and a very talented student Bulat, and RPES work by Bulat and Kyle. In particular, I want to thank my very fearless and energetic graduate student Yi Ting, who's carried out this whole calculation while I was in labor. If you know what that means. Exactly, yes. So before we talk about improving topological superconductors, well, we all know, thanks to the colleagues at Station Q, that there are many reasons to seek after topological superconductors. So let's first get a tally of existing topological superconductors. First, there is superfluid helium-3. Phase diagram with A phase, time reversal breaking, and B phase. It is the original and perhaps the only realization of topological superfluid. TC is very low, mind you. And then there's strontium ruthenate with this crystal structure. It's a triplet superconductor with broken time reversal symmetry, as depicted by this cartoon of the pair with finite angular momentum. It also has low TC, higher than helium, so we're making progress. But there is still debate about whether strontium ruthenate is topological in the sense that the edge current, which should be present, has never been measured. So given the short list, it shouldn't be too hard to try to do better, perhaps. And obviously, there is a lot of interest in trying to do better. And there are several approaches to trying to engineer new or improved topological superconductors. One of them is to use hybrid films of topological insulator and conventional superconductors. And there are experiments that observe proximity effect, and much progress is being made. However, it is intrinsically an interfacial effect. Therefore, there will be some limitations due to that. There are efforts in pressurizing bulk strontium ruthenate. One effort has been in the direction of using hydrostatic pressure. We know from the experience in superconductivity that frequently we can enhance TC by applying pressure. However, the result is that this is as grown strontium ruthenate. When you apply pressure, yes, indeed, it affects superconductivity, but not in the way that one would have desired. This clever setup employed by Clifford Hicks et al. Enabled the experimentalist at St. Andrews to study both compressional and tensile uniaxial strain. And they have been able to enhance TC, which is great. However, the nature of uniaxial strain means you're breaking the tetragonal symmetry, and that means it's not going to be topological. So how are we going to do better? So our strategy is to combine strain engineering via molecular beam epitaxy, much harder than what this picture is showing and takes much longer time, combined with predictions based on renormalization group studies, and the in situ RPES that will connect the films that's been grown to as an input into theoretical studies. So what is the phase space for strain engineering? The first, there are two things, as I understand it, one can do. One is to use isovalent substitution, which I'll try to do real time. You all saw that, right? So you put a larger atom here, barium, which is isovalent, which stretches out the whole lattice. Another way to strain engineer is to make use of the substrate. So these are various substrates my experimental colleagues can use. And this shows that there are various different lattice constants for different substrates. And by trying to grow the film on different substrate, you can apply some tensile or compressive strain. So there is some phase space one can explore. So what is our strategy? Given that there are many different things one can try to do, we'll try to explore the phase space for the films, because sometimes what we imagine does not naturally stabilize or grow in a nice way. And then, based on the films that one can achieve, we'll try to refine a theoretically guided target. So these are the Fermi surface data from some films that's been able to achieved. So this is the strontium ruthenate, which has the parameters that is very close to the bulk strontium ruthenate. And then this is strained strontium ruthenate grown on strontium titanate, which stretches out the lattice constant a little bit. Now, this is isovalent substitution of barium, which does not exist. Barium ruthenate does not exist in a bulk crystal form, but in film, this can be grown. And when it is grown on the strontium titanate, this is the lattice constant. And then this is a different substrate. You notice as you go from this side to that side, as we increase the lattice constant, something dramatic is happening right here. On this side, we have electron-like large Fermi surface. On this side, we have hole-like large Fermi surface. And the system has gone through Lipschitz transition. This is the parameterized Fermi surface that's obtained from DARPA's data. So now, given these films that we have access to, we're going to try to use that the understanding that we gained from ARPES data as an input for RG study. So what have we learned from small U over T limit two-stage RG studies of repulsive Hubbard model from Shri, our organizer, and Steve and collaborators? Well, we have learned that even if you have repulsive interaction microscopically, you can generate effective attraction. So this is an interaction matrix, the matrix in the space of K and K prime, incoming and outgoing momenta. And even if this bare interaction is repulsive, you can generate attractive interaction depending on this particle hole bubble. And this is the interaction for the singlet channel, and this is the interaction for the triplet channel evaluated to one loop. So the strategy was to go from the microscopic model defined at the shortest length scale, which is high energy UV limit, down to some cutoff lambda naught through this perturbative calculation and generate an effective action, which you will then take as a starting point for Shankar type RG analysis. And when you arrive at that effective interaction matrix, big matrix in the momentum space, incoming and outgoing momenta, the eigenvalues of that matrix will each run independently, which means if you find out the most negative eigenvalue at the point where you are starting to flow, that's going to give you a scale of TC. Now, what matters to us is that in this whole exercise, the fermiology controls these eigenvalues or that effective interaction matrix. So then we can try to find out, given this different Fermi surfaces of different films, how is the superconducting tendency going to change? What was found for this parameterization of strontium ruthenate band structure in Shri's paper was that triplet superconductivity is driven by 1D band as some finite but reasonable inter-orbital repulsion. And that means it can be chiral depending on the organization between X orbital and Y orbital, but it's not guaranteed to be topological. So what is our strategy? Well, yes, trying to tune, I'm going to try to do fine tuning. This is not universal, but we have a goal and we are trying to hit that goal. So it looks like a good strategy will be to try to drive triplet superconductivity on the 2D band, which will be guaranteed to be topological. But we would like to do better in PC, so we would like to try to have stronger pairing. And also, we would like it to be triplet rather than singlet, and that means we want this particular bubble to be dominating at small momentum transfer as opposed to large momentum transfer. So the mission is to try to find the Goldilocks zone in this space of the film. We don't want it to be too cold, we don't want it to be too hot, we want it to be just right. So we apply this procedure in these models. We parameterize the Fermi surface using the measured Fermi surface and the LDA band structure calculations. And we start from the Hubbard model as the UV limit, as we found the interorbital repulsion to not make a big difference in what we are going to discuss. So, superconducting tendencies for these different strain films. This is as grown, say, bulk strontium ruthenate. And these are strain films. So I'm going to label it 0, 1, 2, 3. And this is the eigenvalue associated with pairing interaction. And what you find is that as I go from 0, 1, 2, 3, at this sample, this film, the eigenvalue is the most negative, largest value, and it is driven strongly by the triplet channel in the 2D band. And considering that this is where we start for the bulk strontium ruthenate, if we can make this film superconduct, it seems its TC is going to be higher. So here is our Goldilocks film. Then we wanted to understand why things are so good for this particular film. Well, what we found out is that for this Goldilocks film, the 2D whole Fermi surface is near Van Hove singularity, but not at Van Hove singularity. Of course, when you try to make something, you know, happen, you know, atomically depositing atoms, trying to hit that Van Hove singularity right on might be really, really hard. Turned out, we don't have to do that, because there are reasons why you actually do not want to be at the Van Hove singularity. Now, this film, the band structure has poor nesting, which means the finite Q bubble is going to be subdominant to zero Q bubble. That's good for promoting triplet superconductivity. So what we found was that when we stared at the numerical result, we can take apart and understand it as dominantly coming from the fact that the 2D band zero Q bubble is strong compared to these other bubbles. Another important thing about this particular geometry was that it escapes the Van Hove point. If we managed to make a film right at the Van Hove point would be at the zone face, which means triplet pairing is forbidden by symmetry. So you don't really want to be at the Van Hove point. You just want to be close, but not quite at the Van Hove point. And you know, sometimes you can be so lucky that things can just work out just right. So then, given that the superconducting tendency being enhanced at this strain film geometry seemed to be driven by being proximate to Van Hove singularity, we wanted to try to understand what about other instabilities. What if, you know, after all that effort of trying to improve mobility on this film, you know, one finds something else other than superconductivity? So, as we try to find out comparing different instabilities, we adopted the patch parquet RG strategy that was used for other systems such as graphene doped to be near Van Hove singularity. So the idea is that because we're close to Van Hoop singularity, there are four regions in this whole like Fermi surface where the density of state is concentrated. So we're going to focus on these patches because we're not precisely at the Van Hoop singularity. This location and this location are not equivalent. So instead of two patches, which was used for studies right at the Van Hoop singularity, we have to use four patches. And with these four patches, we study how the effective interactions in the opposite spin channel and equal spin channel renormalizes. Now, given that there are four patches, there are six different types of interactions one can write down for this case and this case. So there are a total 12 different effective interaction parameters. And that's why I said my student was fearless and energetic. I prefer to be in labor than to do this. I know most of you cannot appreciate that. But anyways, Yiting's tough, and she did this calculation. And you know, these are the flows of the RG parameters we found after carrying out all the diagrammatics and calculations. So we find these RG flows for different parameters, and then we can combine these flows of the effective interaction strengths into understanding of how different test vertices will perform when we consider different instabilities. So this is just a snippet of all the things that she looked at. There were a total of 3 pages of it, and this is half a page. But when all of this dust settles, okay? I don't want to call this dust. This was an important effort. But when she finished all this calculation and we looked at the result, we were able to make sense out of it, which is that it's actually about betting on different logs. We have various ways of getting logarithmic divergences here, and we are trying to bet on different logs. One comes from the superconducting Cooper instability. Another comes from being close to Van Hoop singularity. Another could come from being close to nesting if you have good nesting. So there are these different logs floating around. When two of them combine, you get log square. And depending on how close or far you are from the Van Hoop singularity, one large contribution might be more like log divergence than the other. So it amounts to betting on different logs. And going through the calculation, taking the approach very similar to the proposals in these papers from some of the authors present in the audience, what we found is that this film is expected to be dominantly likely to have instability in a triplet topological superconducting channel, with ferromagnetic instability being the subdominant one. So to summarize, it's actually possible to engineer fermiology in the sense of the engineer's engineer, not the theoretical physicist's engineer, turns out. And when you do that, it looks like we have a shot at getting dramatically higher TC topological superconductor. Now, soon I will take questions, but I can bet one of the first questions that's going to come up is that, does it superconduct? And the answer is, we don't know yet. Because for these films to be able to superconduct, you have to improve their mobilities greatly from where we are. And it has been possible to make strontium-ruthenate film superconduct. Right now, we are going through efforts in improving mobilities and cleanliness of these samples to try to see whether they will superconduct. And that's it. That's the end of my talk.
Uh, Thanks a lot, Una.
So
we have time for a lot of questions, actually. So Andre first, then Sam.
Yes. So yes. So that's why I said you can't be too cold, you can't be too hot. It has to be just right. You want to be close to Van Hoff singularity with increased, you know, growing density of state. You just cannot be right at the Van Hoff singularity. So if you study this as a distance from the Van Hoff singularity, there will be optimal place where, you know, you're most likely to get triplet superconductor. It just so happens the film that actually exists in the lab is perhaps close to that optimal in the sense that it is showing triplet superconductivity tendencies.
Okay, Sam?
My question has to do with not the pairing eigenvalue, but the pair wave function.
Uh-huh.
So as Andre mentioned, you get, as you mentioned, you get, you'd have to have a node if you were actually at the Van Hove point. The pairing amplitude would have to vanish there. But since you get close, I'd imagine the gamma band would have a pretty large degree of gap anisotropy, though probably not actual nodes. So can you comment on, you know, having a nearly gapless topological superconductor isn't so topological in the real world. So can you comment on prospects for this?
We haven't looked at the wave function, so I'll have to look at it. Yeah. Steve. No. Okay, chair.
Hi. I'm just curious. You showed here that you have three different kinds of superconductors. Do you know? Do you have a feeling of how differently they go and they respond to disorder? Because it seems that in the XY, it's just in the same band, YXZ and YZ, you have some large momentum, disorder transferring large momentum could be important. So do you have a feeling of how disorder is going to affect differently these different states?
That's a very good question. We haven't thought about that yet, though. Yeah.
Steve? Just a real-world question. On the strontium-ruthenate films, how high of TC have they managed to achieve?
I think I have it somewhere.
Same question, too.
It may take me a minute to find it. This is from film. This data is from film grown on this substrate. And the TC was maybe 1 Kelvin. I guess. No, sorry. No, actually, this does not answer. Yeah. I don't know the temperature.
Yeah, that's fine. It's good?
Are you happy? Great.
So, we have the next question. So I have some question. If you could go back to the final picture of yours. So that was done with this infinitesimal coupling, RG, right?
Yes.
So could you tell us along the strain axis where the DXY band hits the Van Hoff point?
Somewhere here, but we only did the calculations at this discrete point.
Wait a second. So where does it hit?
Somewhere here.
Okay, so this would actually mean that everything beyond 1.5 would actually be...
Yeah, so this side is hole pocket, this side is electron pocket.
Okay, so my point is, since this is infinitesimal coupling, one would probably expect that it's only sensitive to this enlarged density of states in a very close vicinity as a function of the strain amount. Right?
Yes, so I cannot quite say precisely where this is, because this is not any quantitative axis. this is a sample axis, sample 0, sample 1, sample 2, sample 3. So, you know.
So then I have another question. So there's this paper by Steve Simon on the helical state, if you had spin orbit coupling, and he has employed the same calculational approach as Doug and Steve employed. Have you thought about adding this to this and see how the trend of the DXY band would modify the competition?
So I think this, the spin orbit coupling, the role the effects of spin orbit coupling would have is obviously extremely important if you are thinking about two 1D bands which are crossing. Of course, it will also be important where this, you know, 3D band is crossing the 1D band. Short answer, I haven't thought about actually doing the calculation yet, but maybe I should. Or maybe you should do FRG. Or maybe we should do FRG together.
My question is just about that, the patch approach you mentioned for the analysis of other channels. So just how dominated by those patches is the density of states for the particular, you know, sample, optimal sample 2? Because it's only a logarithmic divergence of the density of states as you approach the Van Hove. So I'm wondering about the validity of that approximation.
Yes, I never said it is valid. I said we did it. You know, you have to do what you can do, right? And that's why maybe we'll do FRG calculation. But what got us to do this patch study was the observation that when we did the full Fermi surface study with this gigantic matrix, we realized at the end of the day, when we stare at the result and try to understand it, we could understand to the large extent of that result by thinking about different, you know, patches. That guided us to do this. I know for sure that this approximation is an approximation because what we did was we just started with the Hubbard model and then go to this lambda knot scale, generating the effective interaction. And at that point, we have this ginormous matrix, right? And then from there, when we go to patch, what we are doing is just picking a couple of the entries of that matrix. And then we can compare the result after picking just those entries or having worked with the big matrix for the superconducting instability. And there are quantitative differences. But qualitatively, the results were consistent. That gives us, you know, faith that this might be a okay thing to do.
Sorry, so what was the qualitative similarity?
How, you know, different superconducting tendency rise, fall, which channel. This picture. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's thank Ona again.